Okay, good Nerev Shabbos. This week is Parshas Ki Tsetse, and the title of today's shiur is What We Desire, God's Will. Now this is a very complicated, difficult piece that I encourage all of you to afterwards and follow up with a lot of study, because really, a lot of it borders on the incomprehensible and the illogical. So let's start with the Gemara in Yuma on Pei Vav Amud Beis, which informs us that Gedola Tshuva Shezidonos Nasas Lahem Kizichuyos. So the Gemara says something that at face value sounds very nice, which is that if a person does Tshuva, later on the Gemara qualifies it, it has to be tshuva me'ava, whatever the case may be. If someone does a full tshuva, then the averis that the person did b'mezid turns into zechuyos. Not just forgiveness is achieved, but something beyond that is achieved, that somehow or another the very wrong thing becomes a credit. Of course, this is very difficult to understand. Tshuva itself, right, the idea that a person could do tshuva and get forgiven, is already a leap. And, you know, this is discussed by the Mesil Sesharim and by others, that it's really a kindness from Hashem that he even allows a person to do tshuva. Let's go with that. But to go further than that and to actually say the very act that was sinful now becomes a chus. How in the world does that happen, right? It's one thing, maybe you could erase your Avera. Perhaps you could erase your Avera. Forgiveness. But to say that the Avera becomes a chus, that's really stretching believability. So let's look at some of the ideas that come up, both from this week's parasha, and other places as well that are related. So the Orachaim has a difficulty in this week's parsha. The beginning of the parsha talks about Eishes Yifas Torah, and Eishes Yifas Torah simply said is in a time of war, the soldiers are disinhibited, because you know, once you're, and this is psychologically true, once you're in a state where you're going against your inhibitions, you're already committing murder and, you know, other acts of violence. So it's not so easy to control your Yetzer Hara. So the Gemara says, Dibur Torah keneged Yetzer Hara, that the Torah understands the Yetzer Hara and therefore comes up with a formulaic way that if one were to encounter a woman that he desired in the middle of the battle and captivity and such, that there's a whole formula and procedure which we won't get into. There's a machlokas rishonim of exactly when it's permitted and how he does it, but it doesn't matter. The point is, one goes through the process and then is permitted to this woman. The Or Chaim has a big problem with that, because he doesn't get how it's possible that at this moment of great dveikus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when people are involved in this Muhammad, and all these miracles are being done, that Hashem at that time would, first of all, allow the person to be in a state where he's in the grips of his Yetzirah, because Shomer Mitzvah Lo Yeda Dvar Ra, and second of all, even if it were so, why give in to the Yetzirah? The person should be Mischazik. See, he says, I'll read you some of the Lashon, but you can look it up. It's Perchof Aleph, Pesukim Yudav through Yudalad. So basically, he says here, why should we should increase the ugliness? That's another issue too. Okay, sorry. There's another point also which he adds, which is even more perplexing. He says that the Sifri says, see, it says, and then it says, v'choshaktaba. So you'll see a beautiful woman and you'll desire her. So the extra words, desire her, the Sifri learns, even if she's objectively ugly, but subjectively you desire her, it's still permitted as a Eishes Yifas Torah, which you need an extra limud to tell you, because it could say it's one thing if you feel an overcoming Yetzirah for her, so the Torah maybe is matir at the moment of Mohammed. It's another thing if you feel this desire for her that's not based on her physical attraction. You and she like to read poetry together. You have an intellectual connection. You're soulmates, whatever that is. That, why should the Torah allow? She's still, far she's a guy. You know, she wants to convert. It's another story. Anyway, later on, the Yifas Torah does convert, but not at the moment, not at the first moment. Anyway, so he has problems with that, too. Why would the Torah be mad to that? So he says that, he says something really, really almost beyond comprehension, which is, he starts out with the Yisod here. He says that, the Chet Adam HaRishon Nishbu Kama Neshamos Yikoros Biyad Sitra Achra V'Heim Neshamos Agerim. So he starts out with saying that actually at the time of the Chet of Adam HaRishon, certain Neshamos were basically made captive, and they ended up in the bodies or as a part of Goyim. And he says that's where the Gerim come from, whether it's Rus or Shemai and Avtalion or Unklus Ager. All the great Gerim come from those Neshamas that really belonged with the Jewish people, and they later on got reunited. Okay. So he says the following point, that it can be that through an act of joining with the Jewish person, a part of a neshama can be liberated and brought back to the Jewish side. So his understanding of what happened, for example, with Shechem and Dina, that how is it, you know, Dina went through this ordeal that she was raped by Shechem. And then, you know, it was a one-time event. It wasn't like he ended up marrying her. See, he doesn't understand. So what kind of ordeal was this, and what was the purpose in it? So in a cosmic sense, this is just so beyond our comprehension of the world. In a cosmic sense, he says that there was a part of Shechem's neshama that was Jewish, and through the act of joining of Dina and Shechem together, the one-time act, this liberated that aspect of Shechem's neshama, and it returned back into the fold. In other words, it jumped from one host to the other, that a part of Shechem's neshama in that act jumped over to Dina and remained there forever after. And in fact, he goes on to say, and I don't know where he knows this from, he says that Rav Chanina ben Trajan, his neshama was that part of Shechem's neshama. Who knows? Anyway, the thesis that he develops is as follows. He says that when a person is doing a mitzvah, he says that ki be'emsos ma'aseh mitzvah, when a person does a mitzvah, yislabesh ba'adam or hashchina, a person becomes enrobed with the light of the shchina, v'yigarsh menu chelak hara, and the bad part of him is driven away. As it says, Shomer Mitzvah lo yeda dvar ra. He learns not like the Pshuto Shomikra, which means if you're doing a mitzvah, something bad won't happen to you. He means literally that you do not know evil at the moment that you're truly involved in a mitzvah. Now again, we're talking about doing the mitzvah with all the proper kavanas. He says, Kamoke nozik ba'avira, mislabeshes bo ruach hatuma, uma'aves darko. Similarly, someone who doesn't have error, the reverse happens. He gets enveloped in a ruach of tumah. But in any case, here's what's going on. So he says you're involved in a moment with a great mitzvah of this war. And it's impossible, therefore, he says, that you should be overcome with a yetzirah. He says the fact that you find this woman attractive means that in some way there's a soul within her that's ready to be liberated through this act of joining together. And he goes on to say that there's really two different ways this can play out. You could either have a full soul, like that of Rus or Shammai and Naphtalion or Unkos Ager, that needs to come over completely, and those become the Geirei Tzedek. Or you can have just a part of a neshama, like Shem, that needs to be liberated with one act. So he says that the first time that the person is with the Yeshus Yifas Torah, that's potentially the only time. And then you wait and see. If over those 30 days she wants to convert to Judaism, then it shows you that she really has that pure neshama and that the whole neshama needs to come over. Or if she is not interested in Judaism during that 30-day period, then she's released, but a part of her neshama remains just through that one act. I mean, it's really, you know, quite a story that he's telling. And he says that's why it could be that she's not really pretty, but you could desire her because the desire is coming from seeing something deep within the soul. And he says that's also why she has to remain for those 30 days in a very ugly state, so that one can differentiate in case at this point the desire for her is no longer, because now he's not involved in the mitzvah anymore. Now he's just a regular person again. Maybe he would just desire her because he's attracted to her. So that's why she has to look as ugly as possible. And if he still desires her, that shows that there's a full soul that needs to come over to the Jewish side. Quite a story, quite beyond our usual way of thinking. I would say that one side point from the Orach Chaim that shows you that it's quite possible that when one has a desire for something, especially if they're in a pure state, if they're involved in doing a mitzvah properly, that desire is representative of some deeper, you know, yearning of the soul, which is really fascinating. So, like when the Gemara says, "La'olam yilmod odam mashalibo chafetz," a person should learn whatever they desire to learn. It may not just be practical advice, and that is that your learning will go more smoothly if you go in the direction of your curiosity. It may be far more than that. It may be that the fact that you desire to learn a particular sugya or particular area, that's what your soul desires, that's something that you actually need to learn. And so too, the Orach Chaim is saying at least sometimes, and of course, you know, as they say, one should not attempt this at home. The Orach Chaim is saying it's possible to be on such a madrega such that the desire that one experiences, even though it's a mundane desire, it's representative of the true will of Hashem. Here with the Yeshus Yifas Tohar, he doesn't learn that it's a nod to the Yetzer Hara and that it's some kind of concession. Quite the contrary. It's some fulfillment of a divine plan, which is very, very far-fetched in its implications. Now, this has echoes with something that the Tzidkas HaTzadik says, which you can look it up. It's in Os Mem Gimel. And what the Tzidkas HaTzadik says is actually even more difficult to digest and even more far-reaching in the consequences. So, and as I said before, I urge all of you to really look this stuff through and learn it on your own, because it's very, very complicated. So the Tzidkas HaTzadik says as follows. Pamim yesh adam omid b'nisayin gadol kolkach ad she'yef shalosh lo yechata. It is possible that a person could be in such a great state of nisayin that it's impossible that he should not sin. V'zeh hu nechshev onas gomor, the Rachmana Patri. And in that, he says, the person is actually completely an onus. And then he brings a raya. Now, the raya is not mochrach, by the way. Again, everything that's being said here is only one opinion. Not everybody agrees with this, for sure. But he brings a raya from a Gemara and Ksubas and an Aleph from a Beis. The Gemara over there talks about a woman who is being raped. And the Gemara says that if the woman's being raped, if in the middle she all of a sudden becomes overcome with desire, which can happen, although it doesn't always happen, obviously there are rape experiences that are so unpleasant that, you know, that the woman never feels desire. But the Gemara is saying that Should there be an instance where a woman is being raped and the act begins against her will, and then somehow or another she's overcome and she begins to experience desire, she's not considered as having committed a sin or as having been disloyal to her husband. The Gemara says, even if she's crying out and says, you know, let's say they try to stop the man, and she's saying, no, no, leave him, I want him. The Gemara says that it's not considered her fault. Yitzra albusha, her desire enrobed her. Now, the fact that the Gemara says this about a man, they might not have said that about a woman. There's a different psychology between men and women and different ways that men and women respond sexually. So it's interesting, but the Tzidkas HaTzadik brings that Gemara as a raya, as you see. That sometimes a person can be in such a state of desire that they no longer can be considered their fault. But, of course, he cautions, and this is an important point, he cautions that Avala Adam Asmo Ein Yochel Hoyed Al Asmo Bazeh. A person cannot tell himself if he's ever in this state. Meaning, you can't rationalize, this is a very important point, you can't rationalize and say, oh, I'm in a state of Yetzirah, and I can no longer resist, and therefore it's not my fault. You always have to struggle up until the last moment. And then he says, it's possible, and you won't know this, it's possible that maybe you could be in a state where you're putter. But you'll never know this, and you have to struggle up until the point that you succumb. So what's tshuva, according to the Tzidkas HaTzadik then, right? If he's saying that, in actuality, a person could be in a place where they couldn't resist, so what's the tshuva? So here's where the Tzidkas HaTzadik develops this point of Zedonos, Nasos, Kezechuyos, and this is an Os Mem, by the way, and he says something that goes way beyond even what the Ora Chaim said. And basically, he goes as follows. Ikra tshuva hu achi yarashem einav shiyu zedonos kezechuyos. The real tshuva is where Hashem would enlighten the person to the point where their averus become like mitzvahs. And what does that mean? Rotsa lomar, sheyaker v'yavin, that he'll recognize that everything he did was Hashem's will. He goes on to bring proof from the Gemara in Brachas. Gemara in Brachas on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis quotes Eliyahu, who criticizes Hashem and says it by the Nevi Habal. He says that you caused them atas ibosas libam, you caused them to sin. He says from here you see that Hashem can cause people to sin. Now, by the way, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Vav Alach Gimel, learns much more simply. The Rambam says that there are times where a person, after continuously sinning, they lose their Bechira because they've sinned so much, and now Hashem no longer makes it easy for them to do Tshuva and doesn't accept their Tshuva. That's the Rambam's pshat, much more philosophically simple than what the Tzidkas HaTzadik is suggesting, that he's suggesting sometimes Hashem wants the person to sin. And he goes on to say that's how Zedonos really becomes Zechuyos, because in actuality, whatever happened was Hashem's will. The only thing that's missing is a person's cooperation, meaning that the sin was done not out of desire, but out of a wish to fulfill God's will. And of course, this is a completely dangerous thing to say. And he doesn't stop there, because he talks about he suggests that really there's no such thing as an absolute morality, but if Hashem says something, then it's permitted. If it's Hashem's will, it's permitted. If it's not His will, it's forbidden. He talks about the Ramban's Pshat and Seir La'azazel. Basically, the goat, the scapegoat, the one that you throw over the cliff on Yom Kippur, looks and feels a lot like a sacrifice to Satan. And, you know, the Ramban talks about this. And the Tzidkas HaTzadik's pshat in the Ramban is that essentially it is, but it's with Hashem's permission, and therefore it's not forbidden, even though really it would be Avodah Zarah. This is revolutionary. Anyway, the point is, according to the Tzidkas HaTzadik, basically, when one does full tshuva, me'ava, what they're really doing is they're aligning their life and their will with God's will. And when they do that, they basically make a restoration. Because in essence, the avera that was done was God's will anyway, since it happened. And if it happened, it had to have been God's will, according to the Tzidkas HaTzadik's formulation. And therefore, had somebody now done complete tshuva and subjugated himself utterly to God's will going forward, it also reaches backward. And what he did now is considered that he did it with the wish to do God's will as opposed to a wish to just fulfill his desire. At face value, this is almost impossible to accept. What I would say is that psychologically, what he seems to be saying, and what you can understand, is that the experience of the avera and its consequences and the mental and emotional follow-up to that experience is a growth experience. And because of that, it becomes the will of God. Meaning, you know, a person can't learn how to walk or talk. Really, you can't learn how to do anything without making a lot of mistakes. That the very act of learning involves making mistakes. And one could take the perspective that although you have to resist the avera as much as possible, if the avera actually happens, and then the person learns from those experiences, whatever they may be, the emotional and psychological consequences of that experience, and develops and progresses through that experience, it becomes retroactively the will of God, because it's part of the person's growth process and part of their encounter in following the Torah. Like, you can't learn to stay away from a hot oven unless you get burnt. If you get burnt, then you can stay away from a hot oven, right? So also over here, the avera becomes a part of learning how to fulfill Hashem's will. That's probably the sanest way that I could possibly understand the Tzidkas HaTzadik, which is really, really, really a dangerous and subversive way of looking at Torah and mitzvahs. But let's go with that. Let's say that's the pshat. If you want to go with that pshat, then there's another part of the parsha that you can darshan very similarly, which is, first of all, in general, you should know that many parts of this week's parsha are interpreted allegorically and metaphorically. So, for example, the whole idea of Yifas Toar, they talk about the war, the Klei Yakar talks about it being a war with the Yetzirah later on by a lost Aveda. It's Aruch Chaim learned it's a way of finding of, you know, looking after a lost person. Different things Derek Drash in this week's parsha are learned as allegories for deeper concepts. So after the parsha of the Eishes Yifas Toar, the pasuk goes on to say that, let's say a man has two wives, and one he hates and one he likes. And the one who he hates has the bechor. You can't overlook and you can't take away and give the firstborn right to the other son of the woman that you like. The pasuk says, "V'hoya b'yom hanishelo as bonav es esher yirlo lo yuchlo v'akar es ben ha'uva al ben hasnua habechor." So Chazal told us, "Sam shel tzadikim elu ma'isim tovim." That what are the children of tzaddikim? What's their real offspring? What's their real productivity? Their real productivity is their deeds. So maybe what it's saying over here is that as one progresses in life after they've made mistakes, so the ben hasnua, those are the deeds, those are the evil deeds, and then one progresses in life and does better. So the good deeds are the ben ahuva. You cannot alienate your bad parts because of your good parts, meaning that there's, really we're saying what the Tzidkas HaTzadik is saying, that the evil experiences, their experiences have become integrated, they become part of a person's midos, their lessons that are learned from having gone through those experiences. True, the person should have resisted, and had they been able to resist, they would have developed in a different way. But now that they didn't, and they learned lessons, those have to be integrated, whatever they are, like getting burned by an oven, or experiencing, you know, different mistakes, different averas, to learn sensitivity and to learn how to be properly oriented to that mistake. So one cannot alienate and reject that part of themselves. One has to understand and integrate. The hated son has to be as much a part of the fold of the family as the beloved son. Now, just by the way, you know, alternatively, there are the pshatim in Zchuyos, in Zdonos Naslok Zchuyos, the ones of theirs could be turned into Zchusim. So, for example, the Nefesh HaChaim in Shar Aleph Perek Vav, he talks about this a lot, and it would seem that his understanding, you have to look at it carefully, because none of this is said explicitly, but over there he talks about basically every good deed brings a koach hakadusha all the way up the line. There's a whole philosophy that humans, every aspect of the human body, is a representation of a concept that exists in the spiritual world, and ultimately is a reflection of the Tzelem Elokim. So, for example, sight, our eyes, or hearing, our ears, or kinetic movement, our hands, all these are, while they're physical functions, they're representative of deeper concept. What does it really mean to see? What does it really mean to hear? What does it really mean to grab a hold of something or to fashion a tool? Every single concept is a koach, is some kind of koach that ultimately is reflected in the Tzelem Elokim, and in man it manifests itself as a body part. So with every mitzvah that one does, to whatever extent that the mitzvah takes those kochas on, it sends almost the spiritual charge all the way up through the olomos, and then they become in some way aroused, and a special shefa comes down. Don't ask me what this really means, because other than what I just said, I don't know what it means. And then likewise, he says, if you do an avera, it sets up a cascade of negativity where the ruach atuma goes all the way up the line, and some aspect of some koach is now corrupted. So, looked at it that way, I believe what the Nefesh HaChaim is saying is, when you look at it that way, basically, again, it's a different way of saying there's no such thing as mitzvahs and averas. See, according to the Tzidkas HaTzadik, it would seem that, again, a mitzvah is just God's will, and avera is just something against God's will, and sometimes they can take on rather unusual forms, like we saw with the Aruch Chaim. But according to the Nefesh HaChaim, he seems to be saying that basically a mitzvah is anything that creates that tikkun all the way up, and an avera is anything that causes the ruach atuma to go all the way up. So he says if somebody does full tshuva and they are fully misaken all the kochas, so then it's like there's nothing there anymore. So it's not so much to say that the avera becomes a schus, because you can't turn an avera into a schus. What's done is done. But you could so totally not only erase the effect of the avera, but replace the effect of the avera with a corresponding koach hakadusha, that it's as if the avera becomes a schus, because that same area, it's almost like, you know, to borrow a computer metaphor, you have all the registers are set, they're preset at zero. And if you do a mitzvah, they all get positively charged and they're all ones. And if you do an avera, they get set to zero. They're null. So if you do enough mitzvahs and you do them properly and you're misaken all the different kochos, so then it's like the avera wasn't there. And it's de facto a schus, because what is a schus? A schus really is only this tikkun. A mitzvah is really only a way of causing this tikkun. Anyway, going back to earth, because this is certainly a lot of esoteric discussion. What's practical here that we can take with us? Well, I wouldn't I wouldn't go with particularly the Tzidkas HaTzadik, the Orach Chaim, or the Nefesh HaChaim alone to create a philosophy about Torah and mitzvahs, because I think that these are very, very deep things, and as you can see, they can be misused and misinterpreted, and it's hard to know if we fully understand what they're saying. But I would say that it's a comfort to know that when averas are done, as bad as they may seem, and as deeply shamed and hurt and regretful we may be about some of the horrible things that we do when we do averas, and one needs to feel that way. It's a part of the tshuva process. David HaMelech says, "Chatasi negdi samid." You always have to remember the averas. At the same time, it is a comfort to understand that it's quite possible that such as the way as God's will works, that these experiences that we had are part of a developmental and growth process, so that one could be, b'makom shebal tshuva omdim afil tzadikim gemurim in yuchal ma'amud, that one could be in such a place. So that's the best I could say with this, with these different philosophies. Very, very complicated material. It's late. Let me just stop the recording. Hold on.